And aloha, America. Welcome to our show today. It's Wednesday, December 13th, 2017, middle of the weekday, hump day, starting that long, slow glide down to Powhatan Friday. And we have got a lot of stuff to talk about today. The phone lines are open, 800-313-9443. Mike is in our control room, ready to answer the phone when you call on in. And a quick little program reminder, our third hour guest today will be Don Wiskin of Extendivite, to talk about his amazing product and the latest news from that as well. And, of course, Claire and I are using that, and it does seem to be making a difference as well. All right, so let's get right on into the news here. Obviously, a lot of people are very disappointed at last night's Alabama election. Doug Jones has been declared the winner. Roy Moore isn't exactly conceding because already there are all these reports of problems, irregularities they're called, saying that, you know, it was a very close vote and there seemed to be some problems here. And of course, the corporate media is out there saying, oh, this is an embarrassment for Donald Trump. It's a disaster for Republicans. It's, you know, it's all Bannon's fault. Basically commenting on the fact that Alabama tends to vote GOP, and this is its first Democratic senator since the early 1990s. But as I said before, there are already problems being reported. There are reports about write-in ballots being thrown out. Apparently, there was some tampering there. A lot of people are claiming they never received their absentee ballots, and it's going to be impossible to see if anybody else diverted those absentee ballots and filled them out because due to that last-second decision by the Alabama State Supreme Court, the election records, the digital scans of the actual ballots, are being destroyed. So, again, another dirty, crooked election, and nobody in government seems to want to do anything about it. And this should be a warning shot to Donald Trump that if his Commission on Election Integrity does not get its act together and start dealing with this problem, he's going to be a single-term president, and he's probably going to lose the Congress next year as well. And, of course, there was a miracle all over Alabama yesterday. The dead are rising from the grave, and apparently 9,210 dead people voted with absentee ballots and early voting. And apparently there were these so-called poll worker representatives going around nursing homes talking to patients who are basically mentally incapable of understanding politics and apparently filling out absentee ballots for them. And there were the usual reports of machine glitches, polling places. There were long lines because the machines weren't working. And Alabama's trying to explain this away by saying, well, it's a whole brand new system. And, you know, this was the shakedown cruise and there were going to be problems. But Alabama has a long, long history of very questionable elections. And this just appears to be another one of them right now. Apparently, there were allegations of voter suppression. Apparently, people were added to the inactive voter list, even though they voted in the Senate primary. So the usual skullduggery to the benefit of the Democrats. Oh, and by the way, speaking of the Democrats, according to the official Alabama election statistics, 92% of the Democrats in the state voted. That's unheard of in an off-year election. And people are already saying this can't be right. All right. Now, as you know, Rosenstein is getting his grilling in front of the congressional committee, and they're covering a lot of subjects. And Rosenstein is trying to defend all of the investigators, such as Peter Strzok, and saying that, you know, it's normal for these investigators to have their own political opinions. We shouldn't fault them for that. But it doesn't necessarily suggest that they're biased in their investigation. Which is kind of a little bit silly when the entire investigation seems to be biased against Trump. Now, if half of them were biased against Trump and half of them for, then you'd have a case to say that bias is not coming on in there. Now, Rosenstein did confirm there have been no improper orders from the White House. But he also says there's no reason to fire Special Counsel Robert Mueller at this time. Now, as it turns out, surprisingly, it looks like Mueller's investigation is about to wrap up anyway. He's finished interviewing the White House staff, and the word now is the investigation is going to be finished within a few weeks. And earlier it had been expected to go on for many more months. So what it's looking more and more like is, except for those indictments that have already been handed down, which were for activities unconnected to the campaign, Mueller found nothing. Mueller found nothing. Now, one of the real big stinks here that Rosenstein is trying to gloss over is the Department of Justice knew that Mueller had a conflict of interest related to the Russia probe before they even hired him. They issued what was called an ethics waiver saying, yes, we know that there's a conflict. We're waiving this one. We don't think it's a problem. But on examination, the Justice Department refuses to disclose the details on just how they arrived at this decision that Mueller could have an ethics waiver over this Russia investigation. We're going to do a shout out now to our on-air affiliates who are just now rejoining our network here. Now, federal judge, Washington, D.C., Tanya Chutkan, she's an Obama appointee. She's recused herself from a case involving a dispute over subpoenas issued for the Fusion GPS, the firm that commissioned that dodgy dossier. And apparently, Alexei Gubarev, who's a Russian technology executive accused in the dossier of hacking Democrat computer systems, has sought to subpoena Fusion GPS records and to depose its employees to find out more about the research firm's work on the dossier. Now, Chutkan recused herself last month from another case involving Fusion GPS. So it appears there may be some kind of a conflict of interest, or as we mentioned the other day, the wife of that Department of Justice official who was demoted and taken off the investigation worked for Fusion GPS and the Central Intelligence Agency, which raised the question that Fusion GPS is in fact a CIA front. And maybe that's why the judge is being warned to get off that case. Now, getting on back to Peter Strzok, more and more questions are surfacing over his involvement in using that dodgy Russian dossier to get that FISA warrant to spy on Donald Trump's family, because that would definitely that crosses a line when you're out there obtaining a warrant using false pretenses. John McCain's role in this phony dossier is starting to be brought up again. Now, he's trying to talk it over and say this is no big deal. He does, wants this to go away. It's not going to go away, because it's come on out that Senator John McCain was at least partially responsible for putting this dossier in the hands of the FBI. And it's a work of fiction. It was paid for by the Democratic National Committee, the Hillary Clinton campaign, and then later on by the FBI itself. And again, that links back to Peter Strzok. And then John McCain got hold of it, took it to the FBI, and when it was made public in BuzzFeed is when everybody else found out about this. Now, FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe has abruptly canceled his closed-door testimony in front of the House Intelligence Committee as news emerged that the wife of senior Department of Justice official Bruce Orr worked for Fusion GPS and CIA. And Orr was demoted last week after allegedly trying to conceal his contacts with Fusion. And all of a sudden, McCabe is saying, I don't want to testify. So it's looking like there's something else going on with Fusion. And again, if they are a CIA front, they're going to be trying to do damage control on this one as hard as they can. Now, Attorney General Jeff Sessions says that he's exploring the idea of a special counsel for that demoted Department of Justice official who's tied to Fusion GPS and CIA. He's saying that. Whether it'll actually happen or not remains to be seen. But again, if Fusion GPS is tangled up with CIA, CIA is going to go all over Capitol Hill and say, no, this can't go any further. We don't talk about what the CIA does. We don't talk about the gun running. We don't talk about the drug running. We don't talk about any of that stuff. The public can't know what the CIA has been doing all these years. Okay, so we're going to go ahead and start talking about the war zones, because there's a lot of stuff going on over there. Trump has declared victory over ISIS in Syria. And this is arrogance on display. First of all, the reason the U.S. went into Syria was not to get ISIS, but to get Assad. And Assad is still there. And they had all that bogus stuff about Assad is gassing his own people, and Assad is tap dancing barefoot on shag carpeting, and Assad passes wind in the elevators, and all this other demonization that we hear every time the U.S. wants to go to war against another country. Then the U.S. rebranded, because the American people were getting sick of this war continuing in Syria, in what appeared to be an act of unbridled aggression. So they rebranded and said, well, we're actually in Syria to get ISIS and Al-Qaeda. And when the U.S. went in after ISIS and Al-Qaeda, they kept missing ISIS and Al-Qaeda and kept hitting important Syrian infrastructure. That's when Syria asked Russia to come on in, and Russia proved to be tremendously effective in getting rid of ISIS and Al-Qaeda. And now Trump is trying to take credit for that. And then Trump comes out with another very arrogant statement. He's decided that he is willing to accept Assad staying in power until Syria's next election. Now, of course, given that the original agenda in Syria for the United States was to get rid of Assad, Trump just admitted that the U.S. effort to oust Assad has failed. Now, they may try and do something funny with Syria's elections, or they may just be standing around in Syria just so that they don't have to admit that they lost, even though everybody sees it as having been exactly that. And apparently the United States is still trying to find a way where they will participate in the post-conflict planning of Syria. And the United States is going to maintain their military assets on the ground after Russian forces exit to ensure that U.S. officials are positioned to influence the post-conflict landscape. This is coming from former CIA officer Philip Giraldi. So even though they lost, they're still going to be in there and try and force their way in and say, yeah, we're going to help decide what the future of Syria will be. Good luck on that one, because nobody in Syria wants the U.S. meddling in their country any longer. They've had 6 years of U.S. meddling, and that's 5 years and 300 days way too long. Paul Craig Roberts is out there saying what we already know. Washington has lost the Syrian war. And by continuing to try and insert itself back into Syria, it may lose it a second time. And they're destroying their own credibility in the process. Now, Netanyahu is out there saying that Iran is thinking about sending 80,000 Shiite fighters into the Middle East, into Syria, to shore up Syrian entrenchment. Well, Syria is not entrenched. Syria is a nation. And what is going on here is, even though Netanyahu and Trump, and before Trump, Obama, messed up Syria, they're figuring out a way to blame Iran for it. No matter what goes wrong, we're going to blame Russia, we're going to blame Iran. And apparently Netanyahu is also still very angry at the EU foreign ministers over their refusal to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital. And he's accusing them of pampering the Palestinians, says the Palestinians need a reality check. Now, apparently the Trump administration is preparing a public display of what it says is evidence that Iran is providing missiles to Houthi rebels in Yemen. And apparently Nikki Haley is going to go on up to the United Nations and present whatever they're going to show. And this is probably going to remind a lot of people of Colin Powell and his little vial of talcum powder that he told everybody was anthrax. Now, the missiles that have actually flown out of Yemen into Saudi Arabia are known to be a Yemen-designed, Yemen-built missile. Iran is denying sending them any missiles whatsoever. And there's a certain logistical reality that Iran would have a very tough time getting into Yemen through all the intervening territory with any sizable cargo planes. But apparently this is another attempt to demonize Iran ahead of a new war that they're planning for there. Speaking of Yemen, all the Russian diplomatic staff are leaving Yemen. They're going to try and do their functions in Riyadh. But basically they're saying that the situation in Sana'a is too unstable. And they're feeling that their diplomatic personnel are at risk here. Up in Ukraine, Kiev is claiming environmental damage in Crimea. that the Russians are damaging the Crimean environment, and therefore there have to be even more sanctions against Russia. Well, what about the environmental damage that Poroshenko is doing over in eastern Ukraine with the constant warfare? I think that's very damaging to the environment. So maybe it's time to put sanctions on Ukraine or on Poroshenko. But Poroshenko's got to be getting desperate to use environmentalism to try and push forward more hostilities against Russia. It really is rather silly. Now, the other day we were talking about how Russia and Japan are starting to move closer together militarily, with the first move being a joint search and rescue partnership, so that if something goes missing from either country, both countries will cooperate in trying to locate survivors. Meanwhile, friction is building between Japan and the U.S., because there's been another incident down in Okinawa. Now, the Okinawans want the U.S. out, been there for a very long time. There's been an ongoing problem with U.S. forces raping Okinawan women and other issues. And apparently, there was a U.S. CH-53E transport helicopter flying over an elementary school on Okinawa, and one of the windows fell out onto the playground, and a 10-year-old boy suffered a minor injury. But it's once again reminded the people of Okinawa that this very heavy military equipment constantly flying overhead is a danger. They're worried about their safety from all these bits and pieces flying off U.S. aircraft. Now, over in Korea, things are getting a little bit confusing here, because yesterday, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson said the U.S. is ready to speak with North Korea at any time and without preconditions. Says we can talk about the weather if you want. We can talk whether it's going to be a square table or a round table, whatever. At least let's sit down and see each other face to face. Now, North Korea has been calling for talks all along, but the policy up until now was, from the U.S., talks are pointless. North Korea just does what we tell it to do, or there'll be consequences. So a lot of people were very surprised by Rex Tillerson's comment, and North Korea was quick to respond, saying, yes, it's important to avoid war. Our door is open for negotiations. Let's get this thing going. And everybody was saying, ooh, maybe we're going to dodge a bullet there in North Korea. Maybe we're going to back off on that one. Unfortunately, the White House then issued their statement saying that President Trump's policies regarding North Korea have not changed one bit, that North Korea continues to be a threat for everybody in the region. In other words, going on back to this confrontational attitude. Now, Trump right now is standing alone in his recognition of Jerusalem as Israel's capital. Maybe Trump thought he was going to be a new Harry Truman and get the world to just go along with what Israel wanted. It didn't work out that way. We're going to go ahead and take a phone call now from Kevin in West Virginia. Aloha, Kevin. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Hey, Mr. Mike. What's on my mind is the Alabama Senate race. What a fraud. Do you agree with that?
I agree. I agree with that. I mean, we saw, we saw our election systems are rigged. We saw how dirty the campaigns can get last year, and we just saw more of the same down in Alabama. And it begs the question, why isn't Trump's Commission on Election Integrity doing anything? We understand they've documented a lot of cases of election fraud from last year's election season, but so far nobody's actually doing anything. And the Democrats have pulled off another upset. They did it with a smear campaign. They did it with dead voters. We're getting reports that apparently people were bussed in from out of state to vote because, again, no voter ID required. All sorts of chicanery going on like that.
Yeah, I mean, you called this yesterday. I mean, and I think I called in and spoke to you. You're like by hook or crook, and the whole time you said that yesterday, I was like, yeah, they're gonna steal this. Absolutely, they're gonna steal this. My question is, I know, like you said, Trump, the voter integrity, act law that you're speaking about. Man, this is so overwhelmingly fraudulent that there has to be this has to be contested, right?
Well, you see, it can't be because of the Alabama State Supreme Court staying the lower court order to preserve the election records. And that means all the digital scans of the ballots are being deleted if they're not already gone. And it was when that state Supreme Court came down with that decision that I knew this election was going to be stolen. They didn't want any evidence. There's nothing that Moore can do. There's nothing to go back to. There's no way to do a recount. It's just the ballots went in to the machine and some totals came on out. And anybody who watched Hacking Democracy knows how the totals can be fudged. And so, yeah, it was another stolen election. Our election system is completely untrustworthy and nobody's doing anything about it because most of the people who are in high offices benefit from the fraudulent system and they don't want that to change.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I was going to get to that with you. You know, like I had heard these records are digitally being deleted, if not already. And then the other thing I had heard, the military's vote didn't even count. Like, I don't know if you've
heard that one, but that's a surprise. Why doesn't the military vote count?
Well, I have no idea. Apparently, they didn't get them, the soldiers that were overseas, and I guess from Alabama, that were voting, you know, overseas. They never got their the ballots, never got their vote. I mean, and I find that to be quite
interesting. Shades of 2000.
There you go.
Well, you're right about not getting the ballots, and it's not just the military. Apparently, a lot of people in Alabama registered for absentee voting, and they never got their absentee ballots. But it appears that somebody was using those absentee ballots because there were a lot of absentee ballots filed.
Huh. That's interesting. Hey, there could be more fraud right there that me and you just discovered right there.
Yeah. It's a crooked election. It was so crooked they had to screw those ballots into those ballot boxes.
Well, Mr. Mike, that's all I wanted to talk to you about was I had woke up this morning and seen he won by 0.5 of a vote or 0.5% or whatever it was. And I'm like, that can't be. Everybody I had heard talking on your show and other shows that called in and were from Alabama were like, we're voting Roy Moore. So absolutely, this thing is rigged, stolen, and I think this is setting the precedent on what you're going to see in the 2020 presidential election.
I think we're going to see more of it just next year in the midterm elections. The Democrats want that Congress, and you know, especially coming out of last year, there's not a lot of popular support for the Democratic Party. And so if they can't win it honestly, they're just going to steal it. And last night in Alabama proved it. They're just going to go on doing what they're going to do because nobody is standing up to them and telling them to stop.
Yeah, totally agree. I mean, and I'm up here in West Virginia, and you know, right across the road from Maryland. Maryland, same thing. No voter ID. I mean, and they were busting the people in during the Trump election at the voting thing, you know, in Washington County, Maryland, and around Hagerstown. I mean, I watched it. I mean, I should have videotaped it, but you know, should have, would have, could have. But I mean, here's more proof that this is what if our vote doesn't count, if our voice doesn't count, what point is it to be a citizen? What point is it to abide by the laws of this country if nobody's going to listen to us?
I agree. The contract with the American people is broken. We're not being allowed to elect the leaders that we want. We're living in a dictatorship, and having broken that contract, that constitution. Our obligation to that government ends at that point. And we're living under tyranny, and they're trying to still pretend that we're a democracy and we've got some control over the government. But Alabama just proved yet again that is not true.
Yep, I mean, and I said it the other day to you. I don't want to see this thing collapse, but it looks like the Soviet style collapse is coming.
I agree. Mean, all right, getting on back to what's going on with Donald Trump and Jerusalem. Trump is basically standing all alone on this. I mean, Netanyahu's out there saying, yes, this is a good thing, everybody needs to go along. But Trump really is standing alone. Even the U.S. State Department is not changing its view that Tel Aviv is the capital of Israel. And so it looks like this was a totally empty, pointless, symbolic gesture that Trump did that has resulted in this furious backlash across the globe, ended any illusion that the United States was an impartial broker of peace in the Middle East. It's seriously damaged political relations with so many nations, nations that we're dependent on, nations that we need to be friends with, and all to please Netanyahu and AIPAC and Sheldon Adelson. Now, the Islamic Summit has come together, and the Organization of Islamic Cooperation held an extraordinary summit to respond to President Trump's decision to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. And what they came up with is they officially recognize East Jerusalem as the capital of Palestine. And again, there's a significant difference in the approach to the city between Israel and Palestine. Palestine's willing to share. East Jerusalem is supposed to be Palestinian territory under the United Nations partition plan. And they're willing to let Israel have the part of Jerusalem that the United Nations says belongs to Israel for their capital. No reason you can't have a single city that's divided down the middle, be a capital for both countries. And Palestine's willing to share. Israel is not. They want it all. Now, over in Egypt, their foreign minister, Sameh Shoukry, said before that meeting of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation that Egypt will remain at the forefront in defending historic and legal Palestinian rights. So that's very, very tough talk that's coming on out there. Jordan's king has rejected the change in the status of Jerusalem and its holy sites. Now, over in Malaysia, they're condemning and rejecting the U.S. move to proclaim Jerusalem as the capital city of Israel, calling for it ultimately to be the capital of Palestine. And as we mentioned yesterday, there are tensions all over the place here. And apparently, one of the political parties in Malaysia has launched a boycott campaign against Israeli products and enterprises as a form of protest. And they're simply saying there will be nobody will use Israeli products in Malaysia from that point on. Now, I don't know how much Israel exports to Malaysia, but this is going to be another major hit on Israel's economy, along with the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas commenting on the fact that Washington has lost the illusion of being an honest broker in the Middle East, says it's time for the United Nations to take over and settle the issue between Israel and Palestine. And of course, I can already see Nikki Haley jumping up and down and screaming, the United Nations is unfair to Israel. They're unfair to Israel. Now, here's a good one. Over in Iran, a member of the Iranian parliament says President Trump has opened a new chapter in the book of obscenity by recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of the Israeli regime. And here's the kicker. This particular representative in the Iranian parliament is Jewish. That's another reminder about this nonsense Netanyahu is out there saying that Iran is the new Nazi power and they want to exterminate the Jews. There are Jews serving in the government of Iran. And one of them says that this issue of Jerusalem was wrong, was just flat out wrong. Now, Iran's President Rouhani, speaking at that OIC summit, basically said Muslim nations have to set aside their differences for a unified defense of Jerusalem and the Palestinian cause. And Iran is ready to unconditionally cooperate in defending Jerusalem. So Donald Trump has inadvertently united the entire Muslim world against Israel and the United States. It was always a part of the world I wanted to visit. It's on my bucket list. Not anymore. I have a feeling they're not going to like Americans too much for a long, long time. Down in the African Union, senior human rights expert Salah Hamad said Jerusalem is the capital of Palestine and the United States cannot give it to Israel or any other party. And he's absolutely correct. Donald Trump is not master of the world. He doesn't have the authority to give Jerusalem to Israel. Now, Hamas has announced the beginning of the third intifada, following Donald Trump's decision to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, and Israel responded immediately with airstrikes into Gaza. So the bombs are already flying over this. A lot of dead people. And the blood is on the hands of Donald Trump. We're going to take another phone call here. Steve, aloha. Steve, welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Steve down, Florida. You know, I'm going to give you my little take on this whole Jerusalem thing is that to infuriate the Palestinians, you know, you understand that Israel cannot steal land during peaceful times. So I think the whole goal is to infuriate that area there in order to have them riot and protest. Therefore, Israel will, of course, bring in the tanks, push them back further, seize land, and never give it back. I think this is kind of their goal.
Well, it may be part of the plan that's going on. The problem is that Israel is stealing land in peacetime. Those illegal settlements all over the West Bank, that's basically the theft of the land. And Israel routinely will commandeer Palestinian land, supposedly for military purposes. And under international law, when the military purpose is over, they're supposed to give it back to the Palestinians. But instead, it's turned over for development, for Israeli companies to develop. And so Israel is stealing the land, even in peacetime. Israel probably wanted to provoke the Palestinians into doing something so that they could go in and start dropping the bombs again, as they are doing right now in Gaza.
We should probably also be looking for some missiles to be going over to the Israelis, as they do that once in a while, shell their own people, their own areas. Nobody ever really gets hit, but shelling their own areas and, of course, placing blame on the Palestinians and, of course, rushing in with the tanks. Like I said, I think this is a little ploy they have. It's easier to steal land in times of conflict than in peacetime. They'll have reason to do these things, and they'll get acceptance for that. I don't accept it, but
I question that. I question that because they lost the public relations battle on this one. Now, if world leaders had gone along with Trump and said, yeah, it's time to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital, and then the Palestinians rioted, everyone would say, oh, well, the Palestinians are in the wrong here. But pretty much the entire world is saying it's Donald Trump who's in the wrong here. And so every time Israel goes on in and bombs Gaza, the world will condemn it. Israel just doesn't care. They really have no respect for any other country except their own.
Yeah. Hey, last question for you. I do believe the United States is acting like the bully in the schoolyard. They have been for a long time. I mean, is it possible, will we ever see other countries realizing that they're getting picked off one by one, and finally come to the agreement, we can't lick them by ourselves, but let's all get together and collaborate, and let's kick this schoolboy's ass in the schoolyard. I see as that's how our country is. It's the bully in the schoolyard. Is it going to happen? Will other countries finally realize that one by one they're getting picked off, and they'll unite against the United States? Will that happen?
Well, I'm sure they already realize that's the U.S. agenda, is to pick off these countries one by one. I think they're trying to hold off on this idea of uniting and going to outright war out of fear of the U.S. nuclear arsenal. But at the same time, they're probably also looking at what's going on inside our country and have concluded, as I have, that the nation is actually very weak internally, economically, militarily, and could be facing a Soviet Union-style collapse in the very near future. So they're going to just sit back and basically wait for that to happen. But if that does not happen, then yes, at some point, we're probably going to see a coalition of nations form around China and Russia, who also have nuclear weapons, and they'll say, yeah, it's time to basically slap down this bully.
Would that happen? You think that could happen as an economic war or an outright conventional war type situation? Economic first?
Well, there's already economic war going on all over the planet, led by the U.S. with all these sanctions, and now these other countries are trying to sanction back. And my concern right now is that these Middle Eastern nations are going to unite together and declare an oil embargo against the West. And as I mentioned yesterday, they already have major oil shortages in Britain and Europe, right, because of that Austria oil hub explosion and the closing of one of the North Sea pipelines for repairs. This would be a real good time to do that. But unfortunately, economic wars have a bad habit of turning into real wars. And I think our government really does want a real war with these other countries. For a variety of reasons, mostly because they can't rally patriotic support of the American people over what amounts to banking transfers. economic war doesn't fire the human imagination the way a real war does.
Hey, thanks, Michael. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks an awful lot. We're going to let you go. The phone lines are open. Getting on back to that OIC summit, basically Erdogan got up there and said that Trump has basically rewarded Israel for its constant terrorist acts by recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. So it really has turned into an ugly, ugly situation. I don't think this was what Trump thought was going to happen. And by the way, have you noticed on the corporate media, no more reporting about it? Right now, the entire focus here, they're still going over, you know, huzzah, huzzah, the Democrats prevailed in Alabama, mixed in with the tax plan and how it has to get passed real quick. But there's been no more talk about the world reaction to Trump's decision about Jerusalem, because it's all negative. It's all negative. Now, over in Turkey, speaking of Erdogan, do you remember back in 2016, there was a failed coup d'etat against Erdogan's government? And apparently a wealthy ally of Erdogan has placed a bounty on the heads of two former U.S. military and intelligence officials as part of what U.S. officials told the Free Beacon is an effort by the Turkish government to threaten and intimidate Americans who they think were working to undermine Erdogan. So the bounties are about $800,000 placed on the heads of former Pentagon official Michael Rubin and former top CIA official Graham Fuller. And Turkey says they were involved in that coup d'etat. And that's a big reason why Turkey is pivoting away from the United States. You don't mess with other people's country without a consequence. Now then, Tillerson, while I admire what he was saying about North Korea, he's back to ranting about Russia. And he's still out there pushing this idea that Russia meddled in last year's election, even though no evidence has surfaced of that at all. And Tillerson has declared it to be hybrid warfare. So they're trying to find a way to convince the United States that we have already been attacked by Russia. It's very important when the U.S. starts a war. They need to make it look like the other guy started it first, because Americans aren't comfortable with the idea of being aggressors. So this is basically Tillerson out there saying, well, Russia sort of kind of has already declared war on us because they meddled with the election. And again, zero evidence to support it. This is the updated version of Saddam has nuclear weapons, or Assad is gassing his own people. Now, as you know, Donald Trump signed this $700 billion military budget, but analysts are saying that when you add in other spending that benefits the military, black projects, other ancillary spending that's not actually on the official defense budget, the actual money that is going to be spent on defense is over $1 trillion. It's a huge amount of money to go on out and conquer the world. But again, as I've mentioned before, the United States spends more on the machinery of war than the next 25 nations put together, most of whom are supposed to be our friends. But they spend it so wastefully on weapons that cost huge amounts of money and do not work, that it would be folly to assume that simply because we're spending more money makes us invincible. Because it doesn't really. And it's a dangerous idea to think that it does. We saw how well Russia's weapons worked over Syria. We saw how poorly America's weapons worked when Donald Trump sent that cruise missile attack hit that Syrian airbase following an unsubstantiated, never proven claim that Assad was gassing his own people again. Now, Trump may have believed that was what was going on because that was what the CIA was saying, but we know the CIA was lying. The CIA is hardly truthful when they talk to politicians. That's part of their job, to lie, to do what CIA thinks is best for the country, because they're out of control. They're running the show, not Donald Trump. And I have to be very honest, I am getting totally burned out on all this sexual assault allegations. And as I said before, yes, a lot of this stuff really happens. On the other hand, some of these allegations are completely fabricated, as we saw in the case of Roy Moore, for political gain, for revenge, for publicity. Apparently, Selma Hayek, years after it all happened, has now come out claiming that Harvey Weinstein forced her to do a nude lesbian sex scene in a movie that she was in, or he said he would refuse to distribute it. So one of the problems I have are all these women who are claiming these incidents happened years and years and years ago, and they never did anything about it. They never told their friends and family. And then all of a sudden, in the current hysterical climate, everybody's coming forward with hashtag Me Too and, oh, these horrible things happened to me. Feel sorry for me. You know, give me my 15 minutes of media fame. And so forth. But unfortunately, it apparently is a very powerful smear tool, and nothing new about that. There's an old story about President Lyndon Johnson when he was earlier on in his political career was running for office and put out a story that his opponent was having carnal knowledge of farm animals. And one of his advisors said, you can't say that. You know, you can't actually come out and say that. And Johnson said, yeah, but I can force him to deny it, which is almost as good. So we are hearing that apparently the Democrats, the liberals, are getting ready to mount yet another smear campaign against Donald Trump, this one focusing on allegations of sexual assault. And again, money is changing hands on this. Gloria Allred is getting involved. Now, Bill O'Reilly, who was forced from his previous position at Fox News over sexual abuse allegations, and we're not going to say whether they're true or not because I don't know. I've never met the man here. But it has transformed him into a crusader on this issue. And apparently, Bill O'Reilly had an appearance on Glenn Beck's radio program. And according to O'Reilly, his team of investigators have uncovered a tape in which a lawyer offers a woman $200,000 to accuse Donald Trump of untoward behavior. And Bill O'Reilly went on to say that they're encouraging this person who has the tape to hand it over to the U.S. attorney because the investigative team believes there are three separate crimes on the audio tape, along with getting the lawyer involved disbarred. And O'Reilly said that if necessary, he'll release the tape himself, that he'll go to the U.S. attorney. He doesn't want to do that and put himself into the story. But as a citizen, he feels it's necessary to get this done. And if that was documented and he's got the tape, that might pull the rug out from all of this nonsense about sexual assault allegations.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.